The reading today is taken from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 2, verses 13 to 18. When the wise men had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you. Yes, we might be surprised to say this is the word of the Lord after a story like that. We're used to hearing the story about the three kings and all the pretty bits, you know, all the lovely gifts and seeing the baby and isn't he cute and all of that. But then after the wise men leave, we get this story. I'm going to look at it a little bit from the perspective of Herod. I think King Herod is a really interesting character. So let me just give you a little bit of the history and tell you a bit about Herod before we get into the story. He was born 72 BC. Now remember that the years go backwards when we get BC. Okay, so it makes the maths a bit harder. So he was born 72 BC. We know this from other historical documents. He was appointed king of the Jews. I'm putting that in inverted commas. Because he was appointed not by God, not by the Jewish people themselves, but by the Romans, because we're in the time of the Roman Empire. So he's kind of a puppet king. He has to do what the Romans say, but he's in charge as long as he keeps things kind of reasonably calm. So he was appointed at 37 BC. He would have been about age 35. It's not a bad age, is it, to become a king? And he reigned there for 33 years until 4 BC when he was about 68. So he had a long reign, and by the time we get to this story, he's getting towards the end of his reign. And not only that, he's very ill at this point, and he apparently died from a very painful illness. Now, you might have spotted there's a little issue there, because if I'm telling you he died 4 BC, then how did he meet Jesus? Well, we actually think Jesus was born kind of 5 or 6 BC. So, confusingly, not born on the year dot. Now, Herod was very paranoid. He was constantly worried that someone was going to come and take his throne from him or kill him or something like that. He was probably right, to be honest. It's not unusual for kingdoms to pass on that way. But he was so ruthless that he killed lots of people, including members of his own family. He killed one of his wives. He had a number of wives. He killed one of his wives. He killed his brother-in-law. He killed his mother. Don't know why he thought she was a threat. Maybe she was. And he killed a couple of his sons as well. He wasn't afraid to kill anybody who got in his way. He held on to power at all costs. That was what was most important to him, holding on to power. And to be honest, perhaps not dissimilar to some other kings, but even for the time, he was known as pretty ruthless. And I think he was driven by this fear of losing his power. And he's getting towards the end of his reign, So he's even more fearful of Luke, because of course he's not going to live forever. He's aged 68, he's very ill, he's in a lot of pain, he's not in a good place. He was very wealthy, he built lots of palaces, and you can even see some of the ruins of some of them now. And he bought his popularity. He rebuilt the temple. Now the temple in Jerusalem had got kind of damaged. It wasn't usable. He put a lot of money into rebuilding it. And that worked to a certain extent, in that some Jewish people really liked him, because now they can worship at the temple again. Isn't that wonderful? He also rebuilt pagan shrines as well. So I don't think he was doing it for God. I think he was doing it to get popularity. But other people didn't like him because he wasn't really Jewish. I mean, he was kind of half Jewish, but he wasn't really part, you know, one of them. So they didn't really like him for that reason. So we come to our story in Matthew 2. Matthew's the only place, by the way, the only gospel that tells us this story about the wise men. And Herod is in his palace, one of his lovely palaces in Jerusalem. And around him are his chief priests and the teachers of the law. They were kind of like his advisors. They were the people who gave him perhaps some religious advice, some political advice. They were his courtiers, if you like. And these magi turn up. They're called magi in our reading. We sometimes call them wise men or kings. They were actually probably, or sometimes astronomers, because obviously we know they looked at the sky, they looked at the stars. They were probably a bit like the advisors that Herod had, but for the king of Persia from the east where they came from. So they were part of another court outside of the Roman Empire. Perhaps that would have felt a bit kind of threatening, I don't know. And they probably gave advice to the king there. So they were kind of like civil servants, courtiers, that kind of thing. Doesn't say that there were three of them, actually. Could have been any number. Now, they've not come for political connection. They've not come to honor Herod. They turn up and they say, "We've come to seek a new king." Now, just remember what I've told you about Herod. That didn't go down very well, as you can imagine. In fact, if you think about it, it wouldn't go down well for any of us, would it? I mean, I'm at work in my job, right? My job is as a manager for the online counseling team, as in a charity that works with young people. I'm just thinking, if someone phoned me up and said, "Oh, Liz, by the way, I'm looking for the new manager of the online team. Do you know where they are? Do you know how I can get in touch with them?" I'd be like, "Excuse me?" Like, none of us like to sort of find out that we're being usurped, and certainly not by some random stranger who doesn't even know this part of the world, who suddenly turned up and says, "Oh, there's going to be someone else." The Bible reading tells us he was disturbed. I would suggest it's probably even stronger than that. Deeply disturbed, utterly furious, I don't know. This would have been very unsettling and very unwise, maybe, to sort of rattle him like this. Of course, it would have been very unwise not to go either. They're a delegation from another country. Of course you go to the king. Of course you go and pay your respects to the person in charge. They couldn't have avoided it either, I don't think. And notice it's not just Herod that's disturbed, but all of Jerusalem with him. So all of it, particularly, I would imagine, the chief priests and the teachers of the law, because they're the ones that know how Herod is going to react. And when Herod is afraid, he does awful things. We know that. They've been with, you know, he's been ruling for 33 years. They know what he's like. And so everyone else is also afraid because they don't know what Herod is going to do with this information. What he does do is he asks them to look in the scriptures. I would suggest to you that this is the only good piece of advice, a good part of what Herod does that you should copy. He looks in the scriptures, or he asks them to look in the scriptures, to read their Bible. And actually, it's not a bad idea. If you've got a sense of what God might be doing, just as the wise men have, they've seen it in the stars, if, you know, you might see things around you or have a feeling in yourself, check it out with the Bible. Does it fit with what the Bible's telling me? Well, in this case, it does fit with what the Bible tells them or what their scriptures tell them, because it tells them that the king is going to be born in Bethlehem. It's only 6 miles away from Jerusalem. It's not far. And so maybe they're right. Maybe there has been a new king born in Bethlehem. So he sends them off to go and have a look. And he asks them to come back. Come back when you've done that. Come and see me again. And we know that, you know, he had his own reasons for doing that. Well, Herod is sitting in his palace. He's wondering what's going on. Maybe he has conversations with his chief priests and so on. And, you know, they're speculating about what all this is about. Probably kind of pacing up and down furiously, waiting for them to come back, tell him what's going on. My guess would be they would probably have spies keeping an eye on them, wouldn't you, if you were King Herod? You'd send someone to kind of check out what's happening. Now, in our nativities, we imagine the wise men turning up at the manger, you know, just after Jesus is born. You know, just as the shepherds are leaving, the wise men, oh, hello, shepherds, we've come as well. In reality, this story tells us that Jesus would have been maybe 1, maybe 18 months, maybe nearly 2 by this time. They've settled in Bethlehem. They've been there for a little while. And maybe the wise men stayed for a little while with them. We don't know. Herod soon realizes, I think he would realize this quite soon, that the wise men haven't come back to see him. It's only 6 miles away. Off down another path, on their way back. They've been warned, so that's what they do. And this is a huge snub. This is a real problem. They've effectively kind of avoided the hospitality that Herod has offered them. They've not gone back to offer their respects to him. This would be a huge offense in that kind of society. And so we saw Herod's response in the reading. He decides, well, never mind. We don't know which baby it is. Let's just kill all the babies in Bethlehem. That will get rid of it. That will get rid of the problem. Bethlehem wasn't a big place. There was probably about, someone estimated, about 15 to 30 children aged under 2. Maybe we can't quite imagine what the devastation would have been like for that community. It was brutal. There was probably a load of adults who died as well because they were protecting their children, no doubt. Maybe some over 2s who got caught up in it as well. It would have been horrific. Jesus escapes as a refugee to Egypt. Joseph's warned in a dream. He gets up in the night. Quick, we've got to go. He manages to escape. But even for the Holy Family, they would have been traumatized by that experience and by the knowledge of all their friends and family who were bereaved. And having to leave the business that Joseph had presumably just set up over the last year or so with nothing. Well, not with nothing, actually, because maybe that's why they were given that gift of gold, because that's probably what they needed to manage the journey and to set up a new home in Egypt. Herod hasn't managed to outwit God, but he's caused huge suffering. He's not the only ruthless leader who causes suffering throughout history. You can probably think of all sorts of examples like this. There's even some, well, lots actually, in the Bible. We might want to think back to Egypt a few hundred years before. Another ruthless leader who was threatened by the baby Israelite boys and decided he wanted to kill them. Boys are always more susceptible to violence, actually. They're always more of a threat. Do you remember the story of Pharaoh, who wanted to kill, some of you nodding, yeah, you ahead of me, who wanted to kill all the baby boys because the Israelites were getting too many. And there was one that was rescued, a bit like Jesus was rescued in this story. It was Moses, wasn't it, in the basket. He grew up to then be a rescuer to his people and to lead them out of Israel, out of Egypt, to Israel, to freedom, out of slavery. God is rescuing Jesus in the same way, to grow up, to rescue not just the Israelites, but the whole world. There are other examples through history, aren't they? I'm sure you can think of them. Times where there's been tremendous suffering from war, from conflict, from bad leadership. Too many to count. And we might look at the news today as well. And there's still conflict in the Middle East. There's still conflict around Bethlehem. We've got a tenuous peace process at the moment. Let's hope it holds. And of course, other places in the world. There are ruthless leaders all over the place, and maybe not just politically, but you can think about people in your life who you know. Perhaps you don't go around necessarily murdering everybody, but who, there's a lot of fear, and it's like walking on eggshells around them. Perhaps a difficult boss you might think of that you've had, or someone in your family who you don't know what they're going to do, but it's not going to be pleasant. And when we see things like this, we might ask some questions of God. Some difficult questions. God, why do you allow this? Why do you allow suffering like this in the world? And what are you doing? What are you doing about it? There are people who've written books and books and books on this topic and tried to answer this question, and I'm not going to really, I'll tell you now, I'm not going to give you like the definitive answer because there isn't one. But I'll just give you a couple of things, a picture really that helps me to get some sense of why God does maybe allow suffering in the world. And I'm thinking about God's character. Going back to the beginning of Genesis, he's creative. He makes things. He creates the world. He has agency. He can make things happen. He has autonomy. He can choose what he wants to do. And he creates humans in his own likeness. He creates humans. He creates us to be like him. And I think he creates us to be like him in that respect, as well as in other ways. This is the picture that I find helpful sometimes with this. And I think about one of the times when I learned most about what God might be like was when I became a parent to toddlers. Imagine you're someone, you're taking a toddler for a walk, okay? You're going to the park and you put them in their pushchair because that's the easiest way to get them there and they're nice and safe in their pushchair. But when you get to the park, the toddler wants to get out, usually, don't they? And as a parent, I might decide, yeah, I want to give my toddler the freedom to run and walk in the park and to enjoy it and to explore it for themselves. I want to give them that autonomy, and they want to have it as well. They want to get out. They want to do their own thing. And they're exploring, and they're finding a nice stone, and they're finding a nice leaf, and they want to go off here, and they want to go off there. And that's okay, because this is a safe place for them to explore. It's good, this freedom and this choice and autonomy, and they're being creative, like, oh, I found this leaf, and I'm going to play with it. But then they fall over on the path. And just, you might want to picture the look that they turn around and give you. It's not just a look of pain because they've hurt themselves, but it's the kind of look that says to you, why did you let that happen to me? How could you? How could you set me free in this wonderful place where now I've hurt myself? They wanted that freedom, but now they've fallen over and hurt themselves. The thing is, when we make wrong choices, we have that autonomy, but sometimes we choose the wrong things and we hurt ourselves or we hurt other people, or maybe it just happens. Might not have been the toddler's fault they fell over, it just happened. Herod was also able to make his own choices and create a lot of hurt, except he had loads of power, so was able to create a lot of hurt. God loves it when we make the right choices. God loves it that you have chosen to be here today to worship him. He loves to meet with you. He loves it when you choose to pray to him and talk to him, because he likes to get to know you and know how you're feeling about things. He loves it when you choose to love one another and help and support one another. He loves it when we make those good choices because we want to, not just because we have to. We have a choice. The first question we might ask God is, why do you allow it? And I think he allows it because he values autonomy. He values our ability to make decisions for ourselves. So what is God doing about it? Well, what does he do about it? Let's go back to our toddler who's fallen over. And he's looking at the parent and saying, why did you let this happen? Why have I hurt myself? What does a parent do? What does a good parent do, even if they're tired? They go and see to them. They go and comfort them and clean it up and say, it's okay. The pain will go away. There's nothing that's permanent in this life apart from our relationship with God. There's nothing that is permanent apart from our relationship with God and the love we have for him and him for us. He comforts us in our distress, but he tells us this isn't it. It's not going to always be like this. God is with us. That's one of the names of Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. That's why he came. To show, he was always with us, but it's why he came to show us he was with us and to rescue us. He was saved as a child, only to come back and have a violent death as an adult on the cross to save the world. So what can we learn from Herod? Well, look at your Bible, the one thing he does right. But I would suggest the main thing we need to learn from Herod is this. Don't be driven by fear. Herod was fearful the whole of his life. He was fearful that he would lose his throne. And of course he lost his throne because he died. Only a few years later. Maybe less than that, actually. Maybe only a few months later. I don't know. And his fear infected those around him. The teachers, the chief priests, they weren't excited about the fact that Jesus was born. They were afraid because they didn't know what this would mean. Herod let his heart be hardened by his fear. Don't let fear harden your heart. It's so easy, isn't it, to be fearful? It's like really natural. And the things that we are fearful of are probably realistic fears. We might be afraid for our health. We might be afraid for our family. We might be afraid that we're going to lose our job or that we're not going to be able to pay the bills. There are lots of fears. There are lots of things that could go wrong. And maybe some of them will. The Magi came not to conquer. They didn't want to take over Bethlehem. They didn't want to make an alliance with Herod. They didn't even come to seek blessing. They came to worship. It tells us three times in this passage they came to worship Jesus. That was all they came for, and to bring gifts. This is what we need to replace our fear with. Don't let fear be in the driving seat of your life. But let your relationship with God, let your desire to seek him, your desire to worship him, and allow love to soften your heart where fear and suffering would want to harden it. This is what needs to be in our driving seat, our desire to worship and our desire to seek God.